Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Now, fighting has continued overnight between Israel and Iran, and as both countries traded strikes, US President Donald Trump said he will make a decision on whether to get involved in the conflict within the next 2 weeks. Let's listen to how the White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt announced President Trump's statement.
Regarding the ongoing situation in Iran, I know there has been a lot of speculation amongst all of you in the media regarding the president's decision making and whether or not the United States will be directly involved. In light of that news, I have a message directly from the president, and I quote, "Based on the fact that there's a substantial chance of negotiations that may or may not take place with Iran in the near future, I will make my decision whether or not to go within the next 2 weeks." That's a quote directly from the president for all of you today.
So is he stalling, exerting maximum leverage, or just waiting to see how his followers react before deciding? Well, in a moment, we'll get the thoughts of a former Israeli ambassador to Washington. But first, let's get the latest. I'm joined by Leila Molana Allen, who's special correspondent with PBS NewsHour. Leila, thank you for joining us this morning. Just to get the latest, first of all, because we know the Israeli military says it has attacked dozens of military sites in Iran again overnight, and then Iran has launched missiles towards Israel. So what's been happening?
It has. So Israel says that it's hit military sites, also nuclear sites, also research sites in and around Tehran overnight. And we know that many of those have made impact. And in Israel, there was this hospital yesterday that was hit in Beersheba, Soroka Medical Center, where 71 people were injured. Beersheba was hit again last night, and a further six people were injured there. They were minor injuries. It does seem they were able to get people out in time. Of course, what we're seeing is that Israel is very well set up for these attacks. They have the Iron Dome system, which manages to intercept a lot of these missiles. And they have a very extensive network of underground bomb shelters. Almost everywhere you go, they also have sirens. So they are managing to get most people off the streets whenever there is an attack. In Iran, that's not the case. Iran has no sirens. They have no bomb shelters. They have very little in the way of air defense. Their air force isn't really up to much. So people there are absolutely sort of at the mercy of these strikes. They have very little warning. Israel does sometimes put out warnings on social media, but the Iranian regime has shut down the internet to stop speculation from its people, which means that even those warnings, when they do come, Iranian civilians can't see. So we're seeing huge carnage for Iranian civilians who are all desperately trying to get out of Tehran, but there's very little petrol. The roads are gridlocked. This is a city of 10 million people that's been told to evacuate, and they don't really know what to do.
And what's your assessment of the reaction to President Trump's decision not to make a decision for another 2 weeks on whether America should get involved?
Well, once again, as has happened several times in foreign policy since Trump came into this term, he seems to be the person who is urging a pause, urging not to beat the drums of war, which has taken people by surprise. Now, of course, Iran was in talks with America, direct talks with America, that bypassed Europe, who were a big part of the original 2015 nuclear deal before Israel began these attacks. And there is speculation among many that the reason Israel attacked in the first place is that they did not want a deal to be secured. They did not want Iran to be brought in from the cold. They wanted to take action to make sure that they could take out what they see as very dangerous nuclear sites. So it seems that Trump wants those negotiations to continue. Iran says they want to continue negotiating as well, but they won't do so while they're under fire. So it does seem that he's trying to take a moment, probably first also to just assess the capability of America, to assess whether or not it's actually worth getting involved in this conflict. One of the key things that America would be likely to do if they do attack is to go after the Fordow Enrichment Center, which is south of Tehran. And really, it's only the US that has the kind of deep burrowing bunker buster bombs that are needed to attack an underground facility like that. Mm-hmm. Doing so would be an absolutely enormous intervention on many levels, apart from anything else, because it is illegal to attack nuclear sites in this way because of the contamination that can result on the land and affect civilians in the area.
And is it your assessment that the Israelis would have expected Donald Trump to row in behind this assault on Iran at this point?
Not necessarily, in fact. They might have hoped so, but the day before the attacks started, so it's last Thursday, this has now been going on for a week, In fact, the Americans were trying very hard to convince Israel not to attack because they were just coming up to the next round of these negotiations with Iran. So initially, Trump came out on Thursday. He said, this is not the right time to attack Iran. Of course, Israel went ahead. Now, they had been warned by Israel, the Americans, and they pulled out key personnel, non-essential personnel in the Middle East to protect them in case of retaliation. But they said they weren't directly involved. That then changed after the first strikes. Trump stepped forward and said these were excellent attacks and it was exactly what the Israelis needed to do, whether or not because he was embarrassed or he had been convinced by Benjamin Netanyahu is another question. But they do now seem to be walking in lockstep. But it's very clear that Israel sort of went ahead on its own and started these strikes and now seems to have convinced the US administration that this is the right way to go.
And Leila, how important are these talks that are happening between the Iranian foreign minister and other government representatives or regime representatives from there and foreign ministers from the UK, France, and Germany today?
They are incredibly important, potentially. So the 2015 deal, as I said, nuclear deal, European leaders played a huge part in pushing that forward. And when Trump pulled out of the deal in 2018, Europe wanted to keep it going. So we were in this kind of weird limbo where officially the deal still existed. And what's happened essentially is that Iran has said, you know, we have no reason to continue complying with these obligations because the deal is over. We're not getting the benefits anymore. So they did start enriching more uranium. Under the deal, they were only allowed to enrich 3.67%, which is what you need for domestic use, for power. And they've now got about 400 kilos, the International Atomic Energy Agency reckons, of 60% enriched, which is not weapons grade, but it's close to weapons grade. So that's what the negotiations focus on right now. While the US says that they want to negotiate, there's not much trust right now because, of course, they were in negotiations and then they've turned around and supported these Israeli strikes. If UK leaders, of course, David Lammy, the foreign secretary, is going to meet his counterpart, Abbas al-Arshi, who's the foreign minister of Iran, who's consistently said that they don't want a nuclear weapon in Iran and they do want to negotiate. So if he's able to negotiate, the foreign ministers of Germany and France will also be there, who are a bit split at the moment. Germany has come out greatly in support of Israel. France has been pulling back a bit recently, has been saying, you know, on the issue of Gaza, that Palestinians do need their own state, that Israel can't act completely on its own and do whatever it likes. So if they can come to some sort of deal on a sort of softer territory, because European leaders right now aren't backing Israel's strikes in the way that America is, perhaps they can come up with some sort of deal that they can then take to President Trump and suggest he proposes as a solution to this.
Okay, Leila, we leave it there for now, but thank you very much. Leila Milana Allen there from PBS. Leila is a special correspondent. Well, for more analysis, I'm joined by a man who previously represented Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Washington, serving as Israel's ambassador to America from 2009 to 2013. Michael Oren, thank you for joining us this morning.
Good to be with you. Hello.
Good morning, and thank you for being with us. Firstly, what do you make of Donald Trump's statement last night? We heard it there, to delay making a decision on whether to back Israel's Iran offensive. He says he's not going to announce a decision for another 2 weeks.
Well, first of all, let's be clear. I don't represent the Israeli government in any way for him. I represent myself, and I think I'm generally reflective of Israeli public opinion. And that is, it's fine. Let the president make any decision he wants. I think if the president wants to intervene, Israelis would be happy. If he doesn't, we can do it ourselves. And it's going to be more difficult to do it ourselves and probably more costly just in terms of Israeli lives, too. But you know, that's his decision. And the last thing we want to do is be put in a position where we are perceived in the United States as dragging America into a war.
Mm-hmm. You said that Israel can do it alone. I mean, does that change the calculus, though, on how long and how far you can take this without America?
Well, we keep in mind, America is involved. It's not just directly militarily involved. You know, the other night, the president said, we control the skies over Iran. You remember this? Mm-hmm. It was a royal we. And there's an element of truth there, because Israelis we're flying American planes, F-15s, F-16s, F-35s. We're dropping American ordnance, and we're flying on American fuel. So America is in the skies over Iran, just not kinetically, not personally just yet. So Israel can continue as long as those supplies continue. But the Israeli society is taking a beating. And Iran doesn't have to hit us with 100 missiles a day. It only has to hit us with 10 or 15, and one or two has to get through. And it has a profound psychological effect. All the schools are closed. People aren't going out. Much of the business is closed. There's a huge economic price to this. And so, and also keep in mind, this is Israel that is going into this round of this war, because it is one long war, after 20 months of war, which have been very exhausting and painful.
Yeah, and you know, I'm just listening to Leila there talking about what's happening in Iran, and in particular in Tehran, a city of 10 million people who have been told to leave, who can't get out because of the lines of traffic, who have no warning system at all now because the internet has been shut down, and there weren't reliable warnings anyway. How does that make you feel hearing that description when you talk about disruption on your side?
Well, I have to be very accurate here. Israel called for civilians to evacuate areas that had military sites in it. It was President Trump who called for the evacuation of Tehran. And the last thing I think Israel wants to do is harm Iranian civilians. The hope here is that this operation will widen the wedge which already exists between the Iranian population and the regime, which is murderous and terribly.
And we have the former Israeli ambassador to Washington, Michael Oren, back with us on the line. And we understand, Michael, that you're speaking in a personal capacity. And just before the line dropped, we were talking about Tehran, watching people trying to leave, the desperate situation that the citizens there are in. And you were giving us your response to that.
Just again to reiterate that Israel had advised civilians to leave areas that had military sites. It was President Trump who told the entire population of Tehran to evacuate. But having said that, the last thing Israel wants to see is the Iranian civilians hurt or suffer. There's a deep, deep division between the Iranian population and the regime. It's a murderous, oppressive regime, oppressive of women, minorities, LGBT, has lots of opposition. And Israel would not want to create a situation where the population feels it should rally around the regime. We like to see those divisions deepened. So I think that we are maintaining the greatest degree possible in open warfare, concern for the safety of Iranian civilians.
Mm-hmm. But is your solution to getting rid of a regime or regime change for the good of the Iranian people to bomb them, to bomb those very people that you say need protection from their leaders?
No, it would be. We'd be counterproductive. That's why we want to try to limit it. But you do want to create a situation where the regime is proven to be not just a paper tiger, but a tissue tiger. And many of its most oppressive figures and the abilities to oppress the people, the helicopters, the arsenals are reduced or neutralized. I think that we can't replace the Iranian regime. Only the Iranian people can do that, but we can make it easier for them.
Okay, just going back to what we saw this week when there was a hospital in southern Israel which was hit by Iran.
Yes.
And it's appalling for all of us to see doctors and patients being targeted in that way. But do you see that attack and reflect on the multiple times that Israel has bombed hospitals across the Gaza Strip? And consider that the emotions that you might be feeling when you think about what happened in Israel this week echo those felt by the Palestinians over the last months and now we're into years.
I'm sure there's echoes emotionally, but factually there's a sea of difference. See, the difference is that hospitals are used by Hamas as headquarters. And this we know. This is irrefutable. We know. And they maintain their headquarters, they maintain their arsenals, they maintain their tunnel systems.
The doctors we speak to from the aid organizations say they've never seen evidence of that.
Yeah, of course they say that. But listen, Mohammed Sinwar, all right, the recent head of Hamas, was killed with the entire Hamas leadership right under the European hospital. So tell me they don't have tunnel systems under their hospitals. Of course they do. The Be'er Sheva, Soroka Hospital is our largest medical center in the southern part of Israel. It was just a miracle that most of the patients had been evacuated before this. Otherwise, there would have been hundreds and hundreds of people killed, and we would have been in a very different war.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel it's justified that people who go to get food, starving people, from this new aid setup, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, that they're shot as they try to collect that food?
It's not, right? And I'm a big advocate for aid. But I'm not in Gaza, and I don't know that situation, but I do know that Hamas is shooting a great number of people because they don't want them to get aid from Israel or from any international organization other than the ones they can steal from. Whoever controls the food supply in Gaza controls Gaza, and they know that, and which is why they're shooting Palestinians, and they're kidnapping people who work in this new international initiative.
Mm-hmm. There are those who say, though, that Israel's strategy here is to starve the Gazans out of Gaza.
I know there are people who say that, and I'm certainly not party to that. I've always, from the beginning of the war, I've been an advocate of massive aid to the Palestinians for many reasons, not just humanitarian, also strategic, because I know that the reaction that you're showing now on the radio would be a reaction and it would actually constrict our ability to defend ourselves in the south. Mm-hmm. Hamas is still there. Hamas fired rockets at southern Israel yesterday. And, you know, I would say to anybody in Dublin and Ireland, you want to move to that border while rockets are falling down, be my guest. But Israelis won't come back. So it becomes something close to an existential threat. It's a very small country.
Yeah.
And if large parts of it are uninhabitable because of rockets, it's a major threat.
I do understand your depth of feeling, but I also, and I think most people here would struggle to understand how you can watch children in Gaza starving, mothers starving, listen to the UN begging and pleading with Israel to allow the aid in and still say no.
Well, our military and our analysts say that they're not starving. Okay, let's start with that. We have a completely different set of statistics about the health situation in Gaza, but leave that aside.
How can they not be starving, Michael? There's no food getting in. How can they not be starving?
You look at our statistics, they have the actual caloric intake every day. So has there been widespread death from starvation in Gaza? Has there been?
But you're telling me that you don't know what's going
on. I'm asking you a question. Has there been widespread
starvation? I see the pictures.
For over a year.
I see the pictures, but the Israelis won't allow journalists
dead
in.
From starvation?
Well,
have
I tell you what.
If you could allow me to speak, Michael,
If you want us to see and hear the facts, Israel should allow international journalists into Gaza, which it has not done since October of 2023.
Yes, I understand. I'm not particularly party to that decision either. I would have opened it more to international.
But don't tell us what we know and what we don't know when you will not allow us to verify the facts.
But you're basing yourself on Hamas facts, and I'm giving you Israeli facts because the UN facts come directly from Hamas. Okay, let's understand that the Gaza Health Authority.
Well,
you don't know who they are. Nobody knows who they are.
It's the UN telling us
But the UN is getting the facts.
It's the
from
US.
Hamas.
It's the UN telling us that there is a distinct risk of famine. The UN is clear
there
on
is
that.
There is the UN getting their facts from Hamas. Okay, they all come from the Gaza Health Authorities. Neither you nor anybody else in Ireland can tell us who they are, okay? No one can name a name, but we know they're Hamas. Okay, so UN's getting its facts from Hamas. That doesn't mean Israel shouldn't be giving aid. Understand, this is my position. I do think Israel should be giving aid. Mm-hmm. And moreover, I think we should flood Hamas. I think we should flood Gaza with aid for many reasons, even though I know that 60% of that aid is going to find itself into the coffers of Hamas mm-hmm. and strengthen the people who are shooting rockets at our southern border. It's a trade-off. We are in an intensely complex environment here, intensely. And let's not forget, we have over 50 hostages still there, and no one seems to care about them in Europe, or certainly not in Ireland, but we care desperately. And the majority of Israelis don't agree with me. When I go on TV and I say we should be flooding Gaza with aid, people yell at me because, listen, our hostages aren't getting aid. And when in the history of warfare has any country actually at war with another country given aid to the other country? Certainly the United States didn't give that to Germany and Japan in World War II. No one thought about that. But we're in a war, and we're mm-hmm. at war with a country. It's called Gaza. And so a lot of Israelis don't feel the same way that I do. Again, it's personal opinion. And the fact that the government giving aid now is actually against the majority of Israeli public opinion.
Where is it going to end, Michael?
Well, I'm an optimist. Maybe that doesn't sound like, but I am. And that if this is played right, this round with Iran, we could see peace with Israel and Lebanon. Lebanon has been under the thumb and the foot of Iran now for decades. Syria, too. Certainly Israel and Saudi Arabia. And release of hostages, a solution to Gaza, which involves the demilitarization of the Gaza Strip, the exit from the area of Hamas leadership, the entry of an inter-Arab force, maybe elements of the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. And I don't think this part of it is rocket science. It's not easy. And we could see a very, very different Middle East within a year. I could even conceive a situation someday where we would once again have peace between Israel and Iran. But it requires a tremendous amount of diplomacy and forethought.
Mm-hmm. We're a long way off from that today. I think you would agree. Now, I wanted to ask you as well about this review into Israel's compliance with its human rights obligations. This is going to be circulated to EU member states later today by Kaya Kallas, the chief EU diplomat. And it is expected to find that Israel is in violation of Article 2 of the EU-Israel Association Agreement in its conduct of the war in Gaza. If that is the finding, what would be your response?
I think that we have to regard it seriously, look at it carefully, make a response. If we have different statistics, we have to adduce those statistics. At the end of the day, this is a country fighting for its life. And the EU can say many things, and I've been involved with the EU for many, many years. They can say what they want, but at the end of the day, this is our children. And my children are sitting in a bomb shelter right now. And that's what's really important for us. There are parts of that Israel... Can you hear the noise in the background?
Not very clearly, but describe it to us. What are you hearing?
I live in Jaffa. I live in a joint Jewish-Arab city. Mm-hmm. And, we're an hour away from Gaza here. And we live in peace. And, it's possible. It's possible. I'm actually sitting talking to you from the Paris Center. I worked many years with Shimon Peres, and he's a person who believed in a new Middle East, who believed in peace, and I do too. Sometimes you have to fight in order to get peace, and it's what we're doing now. And it doesn't mean that we're perfect and we make terrible mistakes. We are we're not an inherently vicious country. We're simply fighting in an impossibly complex situation, trying to defend our families in the best way we can. And there are tremendous difference of opinion about how to do that here. But I thought it important you hear. I didn't ask Boyzen to come on the radio show, but he is blasting right behind me. I'm walking outside with Arabs and Jews together. So here we are, an hour from Gaza, and we can live together.
But can you imagine being a parent in Gaza today?
I can. Yeah, I can. We've been under war for a long time. And I can imagine a time when Jews didn't have a state and lived in situations significantly worse than Gaza. And so, yeah, I can. And I hope that somebody on that other side will internalize that coming across the border and massacring 1,200 people and raping and burning and kidnapping is not a very good idea. And unfortunately, to live in this area of the world, sometimes you have to remind our neighbors of that.
Kaya Kallas, to mention her again, was criticized by some EU member states for not using the word genocide to describe what was happening in Gaza at the hands of Israel. Member states in the EU, of the 27, many of them, who believe that that is what Israel is doing. How does that make you feel to have that accusation levelled at you as an Israeli today?
I feel sorry for Europe. I feel far, or Europe has lost its moral compass. That word genocide was coined.
They feel that you've lost your moral compass. That's what they feel.
I know they do. Yeah, I think they've lost their moral compass. They've also lost their relevance, which is even worse in certain ways because nobody really cares what Europe says.
That's not a response to an accusation of genocide, saying that nobody cares what you think.
There is no genocide. Is anybody being lined up and put into gas chambers? Is anybody being lined up and shot along the wall? Are we trying to eradicate the Palestinian people? So what you've done is taken a word that was coined by a Jew to describe the Holocaust, and you've cheapened it beyond all usage. So you can't really use it anymore. Mm-hmm. So you can call it genocide. You can call it whatever you want to call it. But it doesn't make it real.
But you've been bombing Gaza for months and months and months. You've been killing men, women and children for months and months and months. You've said yourself the aid isn't getting in. So you're starving them now as well. What else is this?
It's not a genocide. And the bombing goes on because they're still fighting. Why don't you? Let's turn this conversation around. If this is the conversation, why don't you call? I know this is a radical idea for you. Call for Hamas to surrender. Call for Hamas to give up the hostages. Call for Hamas to say we are not going to mount another October 7th 10,000 times because that's what they say if they come out of the tunnels. I know it's a radical notion, but give it a try.
Michael, I think everybody was horrified, and I hope you're aware of that, of what happened on October 7th. And, there isn't one person who wouldn't call for those hostages, the remaining hostages, to be released. And I hope that you will take that as it is meant. Everybody agrees with you that that should happen. That is a very basic and reasonable thing to say. But it's the response to that, which many now feel has gone far beyond reasonable.
Okay, so how do you think it should end? Let me just ask you that question. I'm interested, honestly. That's not a rhetorical question.
Well, the hostages should be released. Step one. And the relentless bombing of Gaza should stop on the other side.
And? Who runs Gaza?
You tell me how it should end, Michael.
I told you before how it ends. They have to surrender. You know, they don't have to come up their hands up. They have to surrender. Gaza Strip has to be demilitarized. All right. The leadership of Hamas, the people who are responsible for October 7th, should not be in the Strip anymore. I don't care where they go.
Mm-hmm.
And we bring in an international force that can begin reconstructing. You're going to have to change the education system fundamentally because we have a generation of Palestinians who've been taught before they can walk that the most sacred thing they do is to kill a Jew. That has to change. And, you know, you change the whole paradigm.
Okay. Well, Michael, we're
saying it's going to stop right tomorrow doesn't stop anything now, does it?
All right. Michael, thank you very much for talking to us. Michael Oren there, who is a former Israeli ambassador to Washington. Back after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.